All right, guys. So tonight's call, we're gonna be going over. I think this is a topic we haven't really covered in a long time. This was recommended by Pratik, and it's gonna basically be me, Maxwell, and Pratik kind of discussing these different topics, which we're gonna talk about deliberate practice, what it is, and what it looks like in becoming better with women. We're talk about general ability. And in sports research, they found that it's remarkably easy to train people who rank highly on measures of general athleticism. So what is general ability when it comes to dating? And what skills need to be developed to make it easier to succeed with women in dating? And we're going to talk about genes. What genes matter, how to tailor dating strategy to one's particular genetic advantages / liabilities. And to give the guys a background on who you are, Pratik and I have been having many really in-depth and interesting discussions about social dynamics, dating, attraction, seduction, men's lifestyle, everything we've talked about. So I wanted to bring him on the call to help moderate. And he's a really smart guy, and he always has lots of great insights into all of this. And just like everyone else, he's also on his path to improving to become, you know, the best version of him. So anything you want to add to that, Pratik, or you want to just fire away?
Yeah, no, why don't we dive in? I thought it might be good at the outset just to define what we mean by deliberate practice. If you've ever read Malcolm Gladwell's book, Outliers, you've encountered this subject of deliberate practice. Or the other place you've probably heard it is if you've ever heard of people talking about the importance of 10,000 hours of practice, which is what people claim it takes to become an expert. They're also referring here to the subject of deliberate practice. So basically, the theory is the idea that what distinguishes people who really become experts in a particular field is that they put in many hours of a particular kind of practice. What distinguishes deliberate practice from regular practice is basically that this is a type of highly focused, repetitive practice where you're getting constant feedback. And over the course of this practice, you're making micro adjustments, which over time lead to better and better performance. For example, if I were to go to a driving range and just randomly hit balls for an hour, that would be 1 hour of practice, but it would not be deliberate practice. Deliberate practice would be if I showed up to a golf course and went with a coach and kept hitting the same club at the same target over and over and kept getting feedback. That would be deliberate practice. So Ravi, maybe the first question would be, how do we apply this theory of deliberate practice to dating and relationships? What does it look like when you're trying to put in deliberate practice in this particular domain?
I would say that the easiest way to do that, or the most direct way to apply deliberate practice, is through approaching. More specifically, through day game approaching. The great thing about approaching via day game, and we talked about that a couple calls ago, is you can essentially minimize the variables. You can hit on women that are by themselves, walking down the sidewalk, or at a mall, or Starbucks, or whatever, and essentially do almost the same thing every time. And you can really get a good sample of what you're doing. You can also do that as well at the bars, but there's more variables at the bars. There's more stuff going on. Anytime you add variables, you make the formula more complicated. So specifically for me, I've put in well over 10,000 hours when it comes to, you know, social dynamics and going out, meeting women, hitting on girls. And I've done somewhere between, I don't know if I had to guess, somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 day game approaches. Probably double that many approaches at night. And so when you add up the hours, it's well over 10,000. I've been doing this for about 10 years. And that's not even counting all the time I spent, you know, learning social skills and thinking about social dynamics before I really got into this stuff. But as far as approaching goes, that is the main route to practice. And, you know, like I said, if you follow our day game advice and night game advice, you can really get in a ton of reps. Anything you want to add, Matt?
Yeah, and so speaking from the perspective of like a natural, someone who was blessed with great genes and social behavior became very, you know, easy to me growing up and up until this point, I think my general awareness and perception of what was going on and the heightened detail and in those interactions that I was having anyway is my constant growth. It's when I go out now, I'm analyzing how I'm approaching women and why X, Y, and Z happened, you know, because of that. You know, to give you an example, you know, this weekend when I went over Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night with Robbie and a couple guys at the house this past week, you know, I really dove into what led to those, you know, that win or loss with a chick, you know, how that everything went down. And by analyzing that, I learned a lot more about how I would approach that in the future. Instead of relying strictly on my natural ability or my natural height or my natural looks, I'm constantly trying to improve myself. And this goes beyond dating. This goes into, you know, health. This goes into business, as you're always learning. I'm always learning until the day I die, and I'm always trying to get better. And I think that with that mentality, you're more likely, you know, that's the deliberate practice in my mind, coming from someone who the other things come easily. Conversation comes very easy for me, you know, and then the genes and, you know, my physical makeup, those things come easy. So I think that's my deliberate practice.
Yeah, and to piggyback a little bit on that, the other deliberate practice that I always recommend guys do is practice conversation skills. Do mock approaches and then go back and forth on conversation skills. I mean, we have a ton of different drills and exercises to do, but I'd say the fastest route to becoming really, really good with women, if you are a Martian landing on Earth for the first time, would be to approach a lot of women and you know, do that with a coach's tutelage and go over the results and see how to refine and tweak that as you go along.
Yeah, and you know, one thing I should have clarified at the outset, the reason why this 10,000-hour figure came about, there's actually, for our purposes, it's actually not all that significant, and we should get into that later, but the reason why 10,000 came about is that it's really only based off of one study of a small group of violin players, and this researcher, Anders Ericsson, just found that for violin players, they had found that on average, people had put in 10,000 hours. Some had put in many more, some had put in less. And it's a source of debate, and obviously it depends on what we're talking about, how much deliberate practice is required. So, I mean, Robbie, you said that you put in 10 years of practice. Have you and Maxwell, have you found that, what sort of a range that you found it takes for people, about how many hours of deliberate practice before you really start to see improvements? And what are the factors that you found, who are the guys who need relatively less deliberate practice? Who are the guys who need much more?
The first way to answer that question is using the inner confidence as an example. We've set up a program here that it's our belief after 2 years within this program of intensive month-to-month real, you know, working on behavior with workshops, et cetera, the hours over those 2 years, we believe any given individual should be able to graduate from this program and you know, and go out there with the best of them going into, you know, our moderator stuff. So that's the easiest way I can answer. I'd like Robbie to kind of take a little bit of stab because of the amount of time he's put in.
Yeah, you know, a lot of it is going to depend on your starting point. Maybe we could use a couple different case studies. Let's take two different case studies. Both of them are moderators and graduates of my coaching, of the Inner Confidence, you know, coaching model. One is Justin, and the other is Carrie. And both of you guys know Justin and Carrie from the group and their posts. And I use them as different examples because they're basically polar opposites in terms of looks and ethnicity. You have Justin, who's 6'2", white, good looking, you know, works in the banking industry, finance no longer, but, you know, he's in the finance industry. He's basically like, you know, a guy like that comes to me, And I see, like, I can't wait to get my hands on him because I know how much easier of a time I'll have working with him because he has those genes in place. You know, he's got the looks, he's got the height, he's already in good shape, he has a six-pack. And it's really easy for a guy like that to go out and immediately apply some of the concepts and get really good results. And then you have Kerry, who's, I think Kerry is 5'7", maybe 5'8". So he's definitely on the shorter side. Right around like the height of 5'9" and up, 5'10". You know, if you're 5'9" and up, you're going to have a lot easier time when you're out at the bars and clubs attracting women. When you're under that, when most women are, you know, between 5'3" and above, and they wear, you know, huge heels, they're all going to be taller than you. So if you're below that kind of height benchmark, you have a lot tougher time at bars and clubs. And Kerry's below that benchmark. He's Asian. You know, he started from a very kind of introverted, logical sort of thought process. And if you look at both those guys now, and they both worked with me for about 2 years before they really kind of hit their stride, I feel. And they both do exceptionally well. Kerry had to take a slightly different approach. He's a little bit more over the top. If anyone's seen his air sex videos, you kind of get that. Justin Justin can play more of like the what's the dude from Mad Men, the main character. He kind of has more of that, like, you know, more of that laid back, strong, silent type. He definitely, you know, contributes conversation, but it's different. I was talking to Kin yesterday about this on the call, and let's say I give the same opener, which is, hey, I saw you, and I had to risk embarrassing the hell out of myself. Come over and talk to you. But I give that to Justin, and I give that to Kerry, and they both deliver it well, and they both deliver it to the same girl. Who's going to get more love? Obviously, Justin's going to get more love because he fits the physical characteristics that most women are looking for. He's tall, dark, handsome, and he's white, versus Kerry, who's shorter, Asian. Also, he's a good-looking guy. He's in great shape. He's got a six-pack, et cetera. So they're both maximizing their genetics, right? But I would say Justin's going to get a much better reaction more of the time just because what women are basically looking for Justin as that guy. But if Kerry comes in with something a little bit more over the top, he shows better communication skills. He's more witty. And he creates more of a punch, then he could also compete with a guy like Justin. So it's a different, you know, the path is slightly different depending on where you start. The skill set you need to acquire is slightly different, but the time frame is very similar. It may be a little bit longer for a guy like Kerry, but certainly you can do it in 2 years, which he did. So that was a little bit of a long-winded answer, but hopefully that answered the question.
Yeah, so to respond to that, and also to Maxwell's original point, what you're saying is that regardless of the genes, people are making a significant amount of progress within 2 years. And I think if the theory of deliberate practice is correct, the key to that is the feedback and analysis, which, Maxwell, is what you talked about. Can you maybe elaborate a little bit more on what kind of analysis is important, what kind of questions people should be asking, and then also on the side of, if you're a coach or a wingman, what sort of feedback really produces rapid and effective gains? So when you're putting in practice, and then you're assessing and analyzing and looking at your results, well, what are the kind of questions that you should be asking, or what should you be paying attention to?
Oh, absolutely.
In order to match?
So a big part of this is understanding the timeline of, like, from the moment, say, you meet, you know, the woman, to the point of, you know, escalation, to the point of, like, when things, you either, you know, made out with her, or you had sex with her, et cetera. And I'm constantly understanding the relationship between that girl and their environment, the different factors that, to say, for my example from the weekend, like the other individuals who were there, the societal pressure, the situation. I gave, you know, an analysis that, you know, I don't think I made out with the chick on the second night because of the the friends and individuals we were around, it would have been awkward for them. And kind of understanding the roller coaster that you go on up until the end of the night, when you reflect on that to understand and see the big picture, that's how I analyze it and break it down and be like, maybe I should have started early in terms of like, you know, physically touching that girl, because that would have started things sooner and it wouldn't have been like a 3 a.m. try to hook up type of deal. Really, really focusing on those analytical points of the timeline of that scenario. But, you know, I think in the bigger picture, in terms of like, you know, analyzing your life and your conversation skills, it's constantly understanding like, you know, the world around you. And I think that as a natural and someone who really believes, you know, in inner confidence as a moderator, my whole perspective is, you know, growing as an individual and analyzing your every single part of your life. So understanding what you're eating right now that is keeping you at, you know, X amount of weight, and what you can, and thinking about what you can replace or add to fix that. You know, what is your group of friends right now, and what are you contributing to that, and how can you expand it? You know, what is your income right now, and how can you supplement certain things to get the most out of your income? These are the type of questions that I'm constantly thinking of, and that comes, for me, it comes back to my gene, and also, you know, the way I grew up. My father, both my parents are teachers, and my father teaches some of this stuff as a professor. So I'm already, you know, programmed to think that way. But as, you know, someone who's just trying to live their life, that analytical approach is really important. And I think within this group, a lot of the guys need to take a step back after every scenario and each part of their life, and ask those questions of why is this, what is contributing this now, and how can I change it?
Okay. So the second topic is what I'm calling general ability. And the idea is here is basically that there is a certain set of skills which in combination have, each of these skills have nothing specific to do with the area of expertise, and yet they still contribute to success in that particular domain. So an example of a measure of general ability would be an IQ test. So if you take an IQ test, the test itself, it has nothing to do with what it takes to be a good doctor or lawyer or engineer, but because it's testing certain skills that are highly correlated with these sort of intellectual fields, your score on an IQ exam is a pretty good indicator of how good of a, again, doctor, engineer, or scientist you can be. Another example of general ability is if you look at countries that tend to win many more medals at the Olympics than what their population would predict, it's because they're very good at recruiting and weeding out people on the basis of their general athletic ability. So if you look at Australia, for example, a small country in a warm climate, one of the reasons they're able to produce Olympian athletes at skeleton, which is sort of like bobsledding, but it's one person going down an icy track. What they do is that they run a nationwide search for people who are just very good athletes, and then it doesn't take all that much training and deliberate practice to get them to the point of Olympic level performance. So I think the way to apply this concept to dating would be to ask the question, what sorts of attributes are important to have which lead to success with dating, even if you're not putting in deliberate practice? What are the kind of qualities that naturals tend to have, for example, that makes them good at this without really studying? What are sort of the key traits here that are important?
I mean, the first one that stands out, I think, head and shoulders above the rest, is athletic ability. And not just athletic ability, but growing up as an athlete. Almost every natural I've ever met played organized competitive sports at a pretty high level. Either, you know, star in high school, NCAA or college athlete or professional athlete. And dating and attracting women is more like a sport than it is like, you know, the study of medicine or science. And I think the correlation between having, you know, not just athletic ability, but spending time around other athletes, being in a team sort of environment, competition, all of the social skills and social dynamics that come from being part of a team. And that may not really fall under general ability, but I think that is the biggest factor.
So, and to play into that, you know, and for example, along Robbie's point, my social network here in LA outside of, you know, Robbie and what we do here, Robbie came and met my group of friends, about 15 of us last night. And every single one of those guys, I know a lot of them I know from back from Boston, not only played varsity sports in high school, but went on and played college. If not, were, you know, drafted for, you know, the MLB and baseball, et cetera. So that there's this correlation that Robbie's talking about that also I fit into as a natural, as a college athlete, et cetera, is the social skills and the relationship between being an athlete and being on a team, and it being more than just the sport on the field or on the ice, et cetera, but the, you know, the whole social relationship to that outside of it, particularly in high school, where I would go to practice each season, all three seasons, and then go out afterward. And my social behavior was, oh, we all have a game Saturday morning, so we're going to go out Saturday night and not Friday night, you know, to drink. And that carries on to college as well in terms of social behavior. But as you have a team sport, you're more likely to be in the locker room and have that locker room chatter that contributes to, like, talking about chicks and, you know, holding each other accountable for social behavior. And I think that if you're in that environment, you've been trained to not say gay shit, to not be socially awkward. Like, if you're in a locker room and you're good at athletics, but you're really fucking awkward or gay, that is going to be, like, literally trained out of you, or you're going to lose interest in the sport. It's like, it really sifts people out because there's such a social component to that. To continue along the lines of what that, you know, what else these individuals, these naturals have in terms of, what we're measuring here, I think the conversation skills and the social awareness, this is something that I think we can teach conversation skills, but it's really difficult to combine that with social behavior and understanding of surrounding. Like, you know, going out with individuals in the group, whether they're a beginner or they're a graduate, et cetera, their understanding of how everything works within a room and how people connect and how girls interact and what that behavior meant and if that person is with the girl or not, if just because she gave him a kiss on the cheek means they're together, like all this social behavior that I believe those individuals pick up are, that's the ability and what they're born with that gives someone an advantage. I don't believe genetic makeup in terms of physical appearance is as difficult as that social behavior, because we work with a lot of individuals of very different looks. And also we teach people, you know, whether they start with conversation skills or not, we're teaching them the ability. So there's things we can teach within Inner Confidence, but the social understanding and the background of coming from that team sport, athletics, high school and college, you can't replicate that. So to, you know, really give someone that is almost impossible unless you're creating an environment like Leverage, in which we do.
Right. And that's why we also really push hard, and part of the graduation process is doing a live-in or a Europe trip, because essentially you're learning through osmosis. You're learning a ton of those, you know, rules as far as social protocol go and how to walk into a room and assess everything that's going on. How to behave in certain situations, what to say, what not to say, the vernacular, all that stuff you kind of absorb, just like you'd absorb it on a varsity baseball team. You absorb it in a much faster route doing a live-in and being surrounded by guys who are really, really good at this stuff, not just good at it, but able to break it down and teach it to you. So that's really the value there of spending time with the moderators. And just a little interesting thing, the only time that I wasn't playing on a competitive sports team that had that sort of locker room mentality vibe was in high school. Up to high school, I played competitive ice hockey, traveling club hockey. And then in high school, I was on the varsity golf team. But golf is an individual sport, even though it's a team sport in high school, you don't have that sort of, you don't have that same competition amongst the team. You don't have that locker room chat. You don't have all the social dynamics that go on like a sport like baseball or football or hockey. And that was the time where I struggled the most with women. And then in college, again, I started playing, you know, I was on the college golf team, but I was also playing intramural sports, and I was playing hockey again and some soccer, and I noticed a huge shift. So if there's one thing you can do if you have a son and you want him to be good with chicks, is put him in competitive sports at a young age and make sure he sticks with it.
But it sounds like you're saying that the gains are coming from group sports or sort of the social interactions about the sport, around the sports, as opposed to the sport itself, or is it a little bit of both?
It's a little bit of both, but yeah, you're definitely going to get more out of it from more of like a masculine, hard-hitting sport like hockey or football or lacrosse than you would out of golf or badminton or tennis.
I will add something to what I was saying before, and I brought this up in the group at another time, that I think that because a lot of these guys grew up with having the social IQ because of the team sports, they relied on it and then settled. And I think that there comes a point where those guys have, you know, have not really gotten any farther beyond their social IQ, and their weaknesses are starting to get exposed, you know, after college, et cetera. And that's where, you know, all the things that we teach in IC put you at par or above, you know, typically above those guys who are only operating on those skills. And, you know, on the high level, I think that even my friends who I hang out with would kill anyone in the group, typically because they're the best looking, like, social guys. But on an average scale across the U.S., I guarantee what we're teaching in inner confidence can combat just social so that social IQ that, you know, comes with it, with sport, playing sports.
And you also have to control for environment. Like, yeah, those guys are going to crush in a club situation or a bar situation where they're there with chicks and they have social proof. But put them in a day game situation up against one of our clients, they'll get smoked.
It sounds like there's a bit of a tension here. Where on the one hand, someone can make a lot of gains by putting in deliberate practice, which is, for example, just day game reps. On the other hand, you're saying that a lot of people or what makes it easier to learn is if you play sports or you do these other things which build your personality in a way that ultimately make it easier, and yet they have nothing to do with putting in direct practice at dating. So, I mean, given that we all have limited time, energy, resources, what's sort of the optimal way to divide time between putting in direct, deliberate practice at meeting and approaching women versus doing things like playing sports or making money or some of these other things which develop important skills but are in a way a distraction from the direct practice?
So we've synthesized the same benefits that you're going to get from competitive sports by being a part of the group. All that locker room talk, the breakdowns of what happened, giving each other shit, going out together, competing against each other, that's all huge components within the leverage program. So, you know, you have all of the upsides of the competitive sport and you don't have to go out and play hockey. obviously, if you want to do that on the side, I love to play hockey, so I play a few days a week. I do that as well. But you're getting all the social benefits without playing the sport by being a part of the group. And you're also putting in deliberate practice by going out, day gaming, having conversations, breaking those down, understanding text messaging, fashion, all of those kind of components. Anything you want to piggyback on that? Okay. I was just going to say, you know, we always recommend the guys do, you know, competitive sort of alpha male building activities on the side. You know, it's great to become proficient at martial arts. A couple of guys that have come to the group that have really feminine sort of characteristics, we said, you know, it wouldn't be a bad idea to like hang out with a construction crew for a while, you know, anything to give you that extra osmosis. But you don't need to go out and join a team. Our kind of theory was that guys that did this at a young age, you know, starting in school, middle school, high school, those are most of the naturals. You'll find most people that are naturals just happen to be athletes. And, you know, you can't change the past, but you can synthesize those same sort of results in a much faster period of time.
And we were trying to, and I think we were trying to make the parallel that you get the, with the example you gave of physical athletes in terms of like what they come to the table with, you know, in terms of their athletic sense versus not, and the people who need to train. But in a lot of Olympic sports, I would imagine that there's people competing who have nowhere near the athletic ability, but have trained 10 times harder and done the right things to get, you know, beyond those individuals who are just, you know, relying on athletic ability.
And here's the thing about dating too. You know, with say gold medal or with Olympic downhill skiing, right? There's certainly a genetic makeup for someone to be the best at that. If you find the person with the best genetic makeup and then give them the most amount of practice, and they also have that determination and the hunger to be the best, it's hard for anyone to beat them. You know, Tiger Woods, for example, in his prime, his genetic makeup for golf is ideal. He's 6'2", very strong. He was in amazing athletic shape. And not only that, but he started at a super young age, and he had the drive and the determination to be the best. Like, he was the perfect golfer, you know, in the early 2000s when he was, you know, winning the Tiger Slam and crushing majors. So he was, you know, leaps and bounds better than the second guy among the world rankings. But with dating, you know, most people aren't out there trying to win the gold medal of banging chicks, right? They're trying to either, you know, they're using it more in terms of happiness and personal utility. So even though I don't have the best genetic makeup to be, like, let's, for lack of a better term, the greatest pickup artist in the world, if I were to continue dedicating the time I'm putting in now, I'd put myself up against anyone, just because, you know, most guys who are really, really good, they quit or they end up, you know, married or, you know, in a situation where they're not really going out anymore. Their skills deteriorate at a pretty young age. A lot of these guys, most of these naturals are wifey'd up by like the end of college, and that's the end. So that as you get a little bit older in your late 20s, early 30s, even if you don't have some of the genetic makeup that you would hope to have, the dating pool is a lot smaller, and you have way better odds if you have really good conversation skills, if you're well-dressed, if you're basically, you know, doing all the things we tell you to do. Genetics is way less of a factor because the pool you're competing against is getting worse and worse every year, and you're getting better and better. And you don't even hit your peak as a man. Like, you don't even get to the point where you're in there's a graph and a study that was done on this. Age 33 is basically when most guys are at their peak level of attractiveness towards women, and you stay at that same, you know, plateau from the age of 33 until about 44, 45. So you have 12 years where you can do a ton of damage in terms of, you know, attracting the highest quality women that you could possibly find.
Great. Does anyone have questions about general ability?
Yeah, I have a question. What about people that are like from the military, or do they have a natural knack for this as well? Like just like people in the sports, like people that are like in the military and got that kind of like masculine train as well, things like that. But a lot of the friends I came out with are from the military that I know, so like, that's why I'm asking.
The military is an interesting one. You know, you don't really go into the military until you're 18, right? You spend a few years. And what happens with most guys in the military, from my experience living down in San Diego, where there's tons of Marines and some Navy guys, is the military tends to attract people from the lower kind of social standings of society. So you get a lot of guys who, you know, they don't know what else to do. They want to go out, I don't know what they want to do. I've never been in the military, but if you use the stereotypes, they want to go out and kill terrorists and hunt people down and shoot them up, right? So you have a lot of these obnoxious dudes and that will come out to the bars. Like if you sample 100 smoke shows that live down in San Diego and you ask them what they think of Marines, 90 of them are going to be like, oh, God, get them away from me. And the reason being is they have a lot of alpha characteristics. They might be tough. they might be in good shape after boot camp, but their social skills are fucking terrible.
And part of that is due to like the conditions that they're in.
They more limit the like the time that they get to see women. So when they're out there trying to get women, it's like animalistic and just focused on it. And I think in San Diego, in that market, girls are probably sick of being approached just so forcefully, you know, opposed to, you know, a guy who has more to offer, something unique or differentiating yourself.
And the Marines is typically thought of as like the biggest dumbasses in terms of military, kind of like the biggest brutes. If you go to Washington, D.C., and you're taking a poll of, you know, military personnel to work at the Pentagon, it's going to be a lot different. So keep that in mind, too.
You know, I want to actually build on that question. It's interesting that I think in society there's sort of a certain perception or stereotype about what a guy is who is not good with women. And yet I think we all sort of know people who are very high achieving at work, and they're good athletes, or in the case of people in the military, obviously they've cultivated these alpha characteristics, and yet they're often totally hopeless with dating and attracting women. And I've noticed a lot of these guys are maybe very logical. So what do you think is the breakdown there? They seem to have the general abilities that you would think would make them attractive, and yet there is some breakdown happening. What's going on in these sorts of situations?
So there's a really interesting graph that I first heard of by a guy named, he calls himself Socrates. He lives down in, I think he's in Orlando, and he put together a graph about the dating marketplace. And when I was in Phoenix, I went over this graph with the guys who were there. I also went over it at a meetup a couple times ago, not this last one. But it measures two things. On the x-axis, it measures kind of your alpha characteristics. And on the y-axis, it measures your communication skills. What you find is as you go, you know, far along on the x-axis, you have guys who are, you know, highly alpha. He uses the example of an MMA fighter, like War Machine. And this isn't just true for men, it's also for women as well. So you have this person who is extremely alpha, extremely dominant, and they kind of ooze off sex appeal. But their communication skills, if they're zero on the y-axis, are awful. For the woman equivalent would be a porn star. And it's very, very common to see porn stars that are dating MMA fighters. And what ends up happening is they have awesome, crazy, hot sex. They are both terrible communicators. They can't deal with conflict. So the MMA fighter beats the shit out of the porn star because the porn star is obnoxious and probably, you know, going off and being a crazy psycho bitch. On the other end of the spectrum, you have guys who are really high up on the y-axis with an almost zero on the x-axis as far as alpha characteristics. You have someone who's maybe like a super high-level ambassador or a politician, a mathematician, a scientist, someone who has very, very trained, you know, communication skills, logical reasoning skills, the ability to communicate with another person and resolve conflict, but they have almost zero sort of alpha characteristics. And what happens is those guys are typically falling into the friend zone. They're not getting laid, even though they're good communicators, so they have friends that are girls. There's no desire for women to sleep with them. So in order to kind of become the best of both worlds, you need to develop you need to develop both sides of yourself. You need to become a more dominant, alpha, confident, good body language, eye contact. You need to develop all those kind of nonverbal skills. And then you also need to develop the verbal skills, the confrontation skills, conversation skills, logical reasoning, the ability to walk into a room and see what's happening. And those are essentially all the skills that we're teaching. So you can find yourself on the, you know, north, if you're looking at a graph, I guess it'd be the northeasternmost point. You're at the pinnacle of the dating market. You know, maybe I can put a graph of this up on it, write a blog on it, or, you know, link to Socrates' post that he explains this really well. But hopefully that answers the question.
Going back to the sports thing, I'm wondering if it's necessarily the involvement in team sports that's doing it, and it's not just or primarily
an introversion-extroversion factor, in my experience, I've found that extroverts tend to play sports that are team sports. They gravitate toward that, and introverts tend to play sports that are more individual.
I think
at
it's
a young age,
I think
you're just kind of gravitating toward them. I mean, I couldn't stand team sports because of all the qualities you're talking about.
I mean, I spent such a large portion of my life playing team sports, and
right.
within the makeup of any team, and I was playing soccer, lacrosse, basketball, all three different types of guys on these teams. And there was guys who were introverts on that team to guys who were really outgoing within that same social makeup. The difference
right.
we're identifying here is that their social IQ and understanding of what is cool and what isn't, what is like, you know, okay to say and okay to do, and how the social world works is more, you know, under a microscope in those communities, then I think that's what they're gaining from. 100%, I had guys who were introverts versus extroverts, and I was an introvert, you know, in early high school. I was intimidated by the guys on my varsity team. I didn't say much. I was a skateboarder, so I was kind of a rebel on the varsity teams, but I was still athletic, and I was still invited to the parties, and over time, by my senior year, I became more outgoing. So what you're touching at is, yes, I think that that sports are more prone for extroverts because they're more comfortable being in a team environment. But I would, you know, on many, many teams from clubs to varsity, et cetera, there's a wide spectrum of guys, and all of them,
well, yeah.
you get a
I mean,
group
clearly there's,
parties,
I'm generalizing, yeah.
Of course, but they understand how things work, whether they're an outgoing guy or not. I knew a lot of guys who were really cold and silent, but like, you know, they were good looking guys and they had social IQ. So when we went out, they still were able to, you know, work the room and know what was kosher and what wasn't. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm not per se, I can't, there's a term I can't use, you know, I can understand it because it's from where I went and learned some. Well, it's hard to explain, but what I'm talking about is not per se exactly introversion, extroversion. It's a personality type that tends to lend themselves to those more familiar categories. So it's not, I'm just curious as if it's, you know, where the cause and effect is really coming into play. So I don't know necessarily that it's the,
well, I can give you an example. You know, I played competitive hockey until age 15, when I quit and focused all my attention on competitive golf. And what I preferred mm-hmm. about golf versus hockey was I didn't have to rely on anyone else. It was all me. You know, there wasn't any team aspect to it. And I mean, that was one of many reasons why I switched over and focused all my attention. But I got better at golf a lot quicker. You didn't need an entire team to play. Obviously, it's, you know, you can spend as much time as you want out on the putting green. You don't need ice time, and there's all those reasons. But I would agree that some people are drawn towards individual sports more than team sports, and those people, especially introverts, are going to have a tougher time when it comes to, you know, there's way fewer naturals that are introverts versus extroverts.
That's what I'm saying.
Right. So yeah, that's just kind of. That's the case. And, you know, to become really good at this sort of thing and become, you know, to improve your skills with women, you have to push your comfort zone and you have to learn. You don't have to, I'm not saying you don't have to become an extrovert, because the way we describe or define introverts versus extroverts is an introvert is someone who recharges their batteries by being alone, and an extrovert is someone
right.
who recharges by being in a group.
Exactly.
And
yep.
extroverts are going to have an easier time with a lot of this stuff, especially in a bar or a club environment, but it doesn't mean an introvert can't crush it either. Does that kind of sum it up for you there, Jonathan?
Yeah, I mean, I think that clears it up a little bit. I mean, I do think that it does seem to be a factor, and it is something that can be taught and encouraged. I mean, people can be introverted and pretend or come across as extroverts when needed, and it can absolutely work for them. I guess
yeah.
I don't understand the need for the other things that I saw in team sports that frankly kind of bugged me, which was like sort of fraternity type things, as far as I don't know what you get out of like making fun of each other or putting people down or ribbing. I don't like, to me, that just seems like teenager material. And I think you could accomplish everything without having to do that. I don't understand that. Maybe
well,
I'm
it depends on what you're going after. If you're going to One Oak on a Saturday night in LA, your competition is going to be a lot of dudes who have spent a lot of time in fraternities, promoter guys, guys who will give each other shit. They'll make fun of you. They'll make fun of each other. It's going to be very similar to that sort of team atmosphere, that team environment. And the girls you're going after are party chicks. And if you want to thrive in that environment, having that background in team sports or fraternity and being able to kind of win those battles and compete with those people, you're going to do a lot better. If you're just day gaming and meeting women at Starbucks and you're going after more bookworm types of women and that's your thing, then yeah, those skills won't really matter as much.
And what we're trying to establish with, you know, leverage, and I know you're very new to it, is somewhat of a fraternity vibe in the sense that you can talk about anything within the group and we're all there to help each other, but we also, you know, will rip on someone who, you know, says something out of line or does something really stupid. And that's to kind of reinforce that we care about you and that we want, you know, you to do better. And I sometimes think that's lost. And because some of the individuals in this group are, you know, getting older and they never experienced that as, you know, at a younger age, they take offense to it very quickly. And you'll meet a moderator in the group, Jesse, who comes down very harshly on people in the group. But I think the overall consensus is that people understand where he's coming from, and he's trying to prove a point that if he's just going to tiptoe through and just be like, no, you shouldn't do that, your logical sense is going to be like, well, I'm going to still do it. But if some dude is like coming out of left field saying you're a fucking faggot for even trying to do that, like kill yourself, alarm bell is going to go off in your head. And there's different teaching styles. So I'm not saying one is, you know, different versus the other, but the camaraderie that I experienced in sports, that I experienced in fraternity, you know, there's some levels of that within leverage that I think you will benefit from, because then when you get into a social setting, like Robbie described, you know, out in the club where a lot of the girls are attracted to, you know, guys in that nature, if someone makes a joke, you're not going to take a personal offense. It's not going to ruin your night. Like if some dude, you know, calls me out on something, I'm going to laugh and go with it.
I mean, I get it. And I get the whole, you know, I get the reasoning behind it. And I get the ability to roll with that, but yeah, I can't stand it. It just, to me, it just seems like all of them were like a bunch of teenagers with, it's like, yuck. Seriously?
Well, that's an area where you can lean into, and you have to understand depending on, and this is, you know, some things you can ignore, like, for example, some guys will ignore certain parts of this stuff. If you have no interest in bars and clubs, you're going to ignore most of the stuff we talk about in terms of, you know, popping bottles and meeting chicks through that medium. But if you're looking to be the best version of yourself, and anytime you meet someone that comes at you and you're not sure how to handle yourself in those sort of situations where you are getting bullied or you do have some guy who's making fun of you or teasing you, that could impact you negatively. Let's say you're with a girl and it's your girl and you get clowned on by some asshole and you're not sure how to carry yourself. She's going to see you as less and less attractive if that were to continue. Or even that one instance that'll knock you down a point or two in her book. And if the goal is to be, you know, the best version of yourself, then you'd certainly want to be able to handle yourself in those situations. So there's
absolutely, I mean, I agree. I think that is, although I would say that the best version of myself involved 0% of saying that to somebody else. I understand rolling it, like laughing at it and going, okay, whatever. He's just whatever. But I just don't understand it. It's like, these are the things I made fun of athletes for when I was in high school and college, for being idiots and saying stupid things. And it's like, man.
Well, the one thing that, for God's sake, athletes are going to do a lot better than you, and I say this based on our limited interaction in the meetup the other day, is they're going to have a lot easier time connecting with other kind of alpha male guys. And typically,
totally agree. I totally agree. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's
huge alpha male guys in generally, which is something I would need to work on, but I hate it.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's that's an area for you to work on, because I guarantee the more successful you become, the more you interact with guys with money, the more alpha, the more confident, the more obnoxious, and the more arrogant they are. And if you can't connect with those guys, you're missing out on huge opportunities for, you know, all the opportunities socially, financially that are there.
Although I will say this, though, I think people have a backward view of what alpha male has to be or what it could be, because somebody could take charge of a situation without doing certain things that we stereotypically think are alpha male.
I can absolutely
stand up for myself and take charge of things. And I'm never once putting somebody down or never once making fun of somebody, but I am not going to get pushed around.
But yeah, we're having different conversations, though. I'm just saying you need to, people are going to be them. Like, they're going to do them and you're going to do you. And if you don't know how to, you know, to deal with someone like that, and you can't make that connection with them, and you just dismiss them as, well, whatever, they're X, Y, Z, that's an area where you could improve in.
And to bring it back to the conversation we were having in terms of social IQ, I would say that my primary, like, talents and, like, the best, you know, traits of myself is that I'm a chameleon, that I can literally, you know, be a very sensitive, like, intellectual guy when I need to, and then I can hang with the fucking assholes and, you know, the alpha males and what you're describing, I can hold my own in any conversation. And to me, that is a well-balanced person. The way I choose to be myself, like, that's a whole other conversation. But in business, in life, in social, in girls, I am prepared for any scenario. And I think that there is a level of value in terms of being able to do that and not, you know, I think that we got to leave it at that and keep it.
Well, good, Jonathan. Thanks for that question. It was, I think it was a good kind of topic. And getting back to critique, where do we stand with what we were talking about before?
Well, why don't we move on to the final subject, which is genetics, and we've talked about that already a little bit. I thought there are two questions within genetics that I thought would be good to explore. The first one is Ravi wrote a good blog post on height, which I'd encourage you all to check out. But I mean, it's obvious that there are certain genetic attributes that tend to have produced different outcomes, obviously, with women. So if we take height as one example, how do you think people should sort of approach or how should they differentiate their strategy based on their genetics? So is there anything that a tall guy should do that's different from what a short guy should do? Are there certain, like, is day game better for a certain type of person with certain genes versus night game? Or, I mean, to what degree should people approach this whole thing differently based on their genetics?
Totally. You know, the biggest genetic factor in terms of attraction is height. And they've done tons of studies on this. And height simply being, you know, the taller you are, the more likely a woman is going to feel feminine around you. And women are attracted to men that make them feel feminine, small, safe, and protected. It's really more about protection than it is about height. So if you're tall, you kind of just get a free pass at, ooh, he's a big, tall, protective guy, and that's hot. If you're short, it really sucks because you have to make that known in a different way, and you have to do it with personality. You have to do that with your conversation skills, by setting clear boundaries, by showing that you have the ability to protect, you know, if the situation presents itself. And there's a lot of ways you could try to show that by screwing it up, and by looking like a huge douchebag, by looking like a short guy with a Napoleon complex. So, you know, the burden of proof is on you being a shorter guy, and that makes it way more difficult. So you have a lot tougher road. You know, if you're 5'6" versus 6'6", you know, it sucks, but being able to, you know, to excel and to learn those skills are so huge. And, you know, the carryover in other aspects of life, it's going to be worth it. You know, you could either say, hey, I'm a victim, I'm short, wah is me, or you can learn to develop the other aspects of your personality and gain all of those huge benefits.
And I've seen this on a wide range. And like I've been out with NBA players who are just like tall and really good looking, but girls, like, they don't know how to even talk to a girl. And so what we teach in Inner Confidence is, you know, figuring out the different skills that you can compete with someone who's 6'5". And if I didn't work on myself at all and I was just 6'5" going to the club, yeah, I might get the attention of the girls off the bat. But in terms of talking to them, I could just be a wallflower and nothing ever happened. And one of the things that I worked with Thomas when we were in Phoenix was, you know, commanding that confidence when you walk into a bar, utilizing your height in that respect to make the most out of it. But you also need to do the work and the conversation skills, and, you know, everything else, like the fashion and everything else that goes along with it is still super important. So I being a guy who's 6'5", you know, on paper, on Tinder, yeah, I get more swipe right because I'm 6'5" and not 5'3", and I use that height thing to my advantage. Because if you look at Tinder profiles, girls will say, no guys under 6 feet, you know, tall guys only. They literally do not want to talk to short guys because their experience with short guys is that they, you know, they can't compensate for that height and that it's not worth their time. And what we're teaching here is trying to, you know, figure out other ways to compete.
So if you're a shorter guy, for example, you're going to have a much easier time on day game than you are on Tinder. Any sort of online dating is going to be way tougher because you're getting judged more on your physical attributes than on your personality and conversation skills. So anything you can do to put yourself in an environment with hot girls where you get to show off, you know, your conversation skills, your best attributes without being judged immediately by your size is huge. And that's why I'm always such a huge proponent of day game, because if they're out, they're probably not wearing heels. Even if you are 5'6 or 5'7, you're still taller than most women. And if they're walking around in flats and you just straight up come and approach them, you don't look like the short guy that you would look like in a club. You look like a guy who's taller than them, and they're not going to be judging you nearly as much on that as they are going to be on your conversation skills, your ability to make them feel comfortable and flirty and have fun in that interaction. So height's going to be the biggest one. And height is so much more important than good looks. I mean, good looks, I see tons of guys who are really, really good looking. And if you're short, it doesn't matter. If your conversation sucks, it doesn't matter. If you're tall and you're really good looking, it's barely even different than if you're tall and your, you know, your bone structure, your genetic makeup makes you have an ugly face. Like a Brad Pitt who's 5'6" is way less attractive on paper than, you know, I don't know, who's an example of an ugly dude. You know, a Tommy Lee Jones who's 6'4". So height is way more important than how good looking you are, your bone structure, your facial features. Let's see, other genetic makeup.
You talk about physically, you know, your genetic makeup in terms of being an attractive individual. And I had this conversation with Shalev that, like, I could go out with Shalev, and though he's a little bit shorter than me, the dude is significantly better looking than I am. And I guarantee I will get more numbers and do better in that situation because of what I bring to the table in terms of conversation, you know, and in terms of my aura, my confidence in that world. And we you know, wingman, and I think Trump's making huge moves in terms of improving. But the point is, you know, even a guy who is that, you know, good looking still has to figure out ways to you know, balance it out.
And basically, looks are only going to get you in the door. And if you're good looking and tall and you have terrible body language, you lose out on any of those benefits as well. And I'll see a lot of guys who are tall, good looking, and they have feminine body language. They don't accept space. They're awkward in their movements. They kind of have like the Jack and the Beanstalk walk, or they have, you know, odd mannerisms, and goodbye any sort of attraction right off the bat. You know, good looks and height will get you in the door for about 5 seconds. And then what matters is what comes out of your mouth. Because women fall in love with their ears, men fall in love through their eyes. And, you know, at first, silly women will say, like, oh, yeah, height matters, looks matter. But I guarantee if you were to poll women in their mid-30s versus women in their mid-20s, the response of what they're looking for is going to be drastically different. mid-30s are all going to say they want someone who's funny, who's charismatic, who's cool, who's confident. Looks is going to be very, very, very low on the totem pole versus women in their mid-20s. They're going to put looks way up there because they're just too young and stupid to understand what they're really attracted to. So, you know, they're conditioned to think that these looks matter based on pop culture and the media. But when push comes to shove, you don't get to choose who you're attracted to. So even if a girl says, I'm only going to date a guy who's 6'2 and really, really hot, if you walk up to that girl, you know, during the day and you're a 5'6 Asian guy, but your conversation skills are fucking awesome and you wow her, she's going to be like, I don't know what I'm doing, but like, I can't believe it. She's going to tell all her friends about this really hot Asian dude that she's dating. I can't tell you the number of times that I've heard that same story from young, dumb chicks who are like, I thought I would never, ever date this guy, but he's so hot. And I'm like, so in love with him. So, you know, don't let that stop you because it's all nonsense.
So the interesting thing to me with genetics, it seems that there are two categories. There's one category, which is things like height and looks and so forth, which you have minimal control over, and yet they sort of matter in obvious ways. But it seems like people sort of acquire another set of characteristics, which it seems to me don't necessarily, are not inherently good or bad. So one example might be introversion and extroversion. I think there probably is a genetic basis to that. And one isn't inherently better or the other, and yet it seems to me that they would have very different implications in terms of how one should go about pursuing women or dating. So in the realm of personality, assuming that there is a genetic component to this, how would you advise people to sort of assess their own personality, and then what should they do based on that insight?
So depending on whether there's another graph and kind of a quadrant I designed for this as well that you can find. If you go to innerconfidence.com and you download the confidence alignment kit, and a lot of you veterans from the group, you haven't seen this because I haven't, this is old content that, you know, I think I did a 21 convention speech on it 4 or 5 years ago, but I haven't presented to the group. But if you go to the site and you download that confidence alignment special report, you can check this out. And it's pretty interesting. You've got four quadrants. On one side, you have introverted and extroverted. And then on the other side, you have aggressive and passive. And I find that most people kind of fall into one of those categories. Like for me, as an example, when I first got into this stuff, I was an extroverted, passive guy. I enjoyed being around people. I recharged my batteries by being in a group, but I was extremely passive. And it made me look introverted. It made me look shy because I didn't take the lead in conversations. I wasn't very vocal, but that didn't mean I was introverted. It just meant I was passive. On the opposite side of that spectrum is you have an introverted, aggressive guy who's a type of guy, you know, like Jesse, for example. I wouldn't go as far as saying he's an introvert, but let's take, for example, like someone who's really aggressive and outrageous and outgoing and obnoxious, but they recharge their batteries by being alone. You know, the path to success for him is going to be a lot different than the path to success for me. And then you also have someone, most of the guys that I work with fall into the category of introverted and passive. Those are guys that recharge their batteries by being alone, and they're a lot more passive when they're in a group situation, conversationally. They're a lot less likely to open their mouth and talk. And for a guy to become better, there's no sense in trying to change whether you're an introvert or an extrovert. That doesn't matter. You can't change it, right? How you recharge your batteries is how you recharge your batteries. But you can be more assertive, and assertive is different than aggressive. Aggressive is being obnoxious and outrageous, which I don't coach anyone to be in, but I coach people to have boundaries, to assert themselves, to learn how to tell stories and compete in sort of a group dynamic, how to garner the attention of other people, how to create attraction, how to be interesting and outgoing. And it's really important that you make that shift, you know, on that graph, and you don't jump immediately from passive to aggressive. I see a lot of guys doing that too. That's kind of like the Napoleon complex, guys who are, you know, real passive and
you know, they want to jump over and be real aggressive. And then you have this, you know, like this little yappy dog trying to assert themselves in the wrong way.
If you look at the sort of debate on this field of high performance and expertise, there's an interesting exchange that I think would be worth thinking about. So the people who tend to emphasize the role of deliberate practice, the typical argument you hear is that, look, if you're trying to understand why some people are experts and why some people are average, there's nothing special about the experts. It's just that they put in many more hours of practice, and that's why they're better. And a common retort to this argument is that, well, yeah, it's true that these people put in more deliberate practice, but there is also a genetic component to this, which is to say that in order to be someone who is ultimately willing and motivated to put in thousands and thousands of hours of deliberate practice, there must be a genetic component. And I think we can all sort of think of high achieving people we know who maybe have an obsessive personality, or if you look at in the art world, for example, they're sort of really eccentric types, and these sorts of personality traits lead to success. To me, I guess I'm sort of agnostic in a way on whether to what degree these personality traits are genetic, because it seems to me that the obvious question is, if we're trying to improve at dating and relationships, what have you found? What's the personality type of someone who makes really rapid progress with deliberate practice? So who are the guys who get into this and they put in the practice and you see their results sort of shooting through the roof compared to people who are putting in the practice but not necessarily making gains? What are the common personality types of people who improve really quickly, and what sorts of personality traits should one try to adopt?
You know, it's funny when I think about this, the first thing that comes to mind is it really doesn't matter. And the thing I see across the board is the guys that put in deliberate practice all improve very, very quickly. You know, there's one guy in particular that I feel like is improving very fast, Jay in the group, and he's definitely more of the introverted type. You know, the guy didn't say a single word for a long time. Well, I'm not completely sure if he's an introvert. We'd have to ask him. But his progress has been extremely fast because you see him posting text message threads in the group. He's going out. He's day gaming. He's going out at night. He's doing everything we're telling him to do. And he's got a date set up Thursday, a date set up Friday with a girl who's in an open relationship. You pretty much know that if he you know, navigates that date correctly, that's going to be ending up in the bed with her at the end of the night. And I've seen other guys who are improving really fast too, like Kin, for example. For a long time, he wasn't improving very quickly at all. And my last couple calls with Kin, we've done some conversation practice, and I've been absolutely blown out of the water at how amazing his conversation skills have become. You know, and I do these role play conversations all the time, and most of the time I'm like falling asleep talking to guys pretending to be the girl. And Kin had me like cracking up on both attempts that we did it. You know, he's 2 for 2, and he's definitely, you know, he's certainly, I would argue, more of the introverted type as well. And you would expect extroverts to get better at this stuff faster, but I don't really think there's a big correlation. And the other great thing is you know, you're just as likely to meet an introvert out there who's a woman versus an extrovert. And it's different from most sports, or it's like a sport, but it's different than a sport because you're not trying to beat everyone else. You're just trying to find people that you connect with. And introverts can be just as good at connecting with people than extroverts can. And an introvert is probably going to do a better job connecting with a fellow introvert, just like an extrovert will connect with a fellow extrovert easier. And, you know, like I said, if you do the math, it's 50-50. If you're an introvert and you're hitting on a girl, you have a 50-50 chance if she's the same as you. And none of those, you know, really play a role in how attractive the girl is. There's a lot of smoke show introverts and there's a lot of smoke show extroverts. You're more likely to meet the extroverts out of the club. But if you're day gaming or using online dating, you have a really good chance to meet a lot of these introverts too. So in terms of who's going to get better faster, I think, in, you know,
My answer as of now, unless I were to really research it, is it doesn't matter. What do you guys think? Other people on the call? Well, let me call on someone who's been around for a while. Let me ask you, Leonard. Can you speak on this? You're now a graduate of the group. You've been around for over 2 years. You've certainly come a long way. I would definitely argue that you're an introvert. What are your thoughts?
Okay, I am an introvert, and I think it's introversion and extroversion are just a way of expressing yourself. The way you get better is you figure out where your flaws are and you work on them. And it's going to be different for everybody, but somebody who can really, you know, whether it's being externally being told, like I need that a hell of a lot of, or internally being able to sit there and say, well, you know, I did this and this and that, and this worked, but that didn't work, and do that. It's all about the amount of time and effort and the best way for you to learn. So anybody can do it.
Yeah. And the more I think about it, you know, the only difference between someone who's an extrovert versus an introvert is an extrovert's going to be drawn more to, you know, go out to the nightclubs, pick up girls in a bottle service situation, and an introvert's going to be drawn more towards day game or more towards like a more of a loungy atmosphere and getting in one-on-one conversation. And you could be equally as effective in either situation. You know, and I think introverts have a little bit easier time connecting with people, maybe one-on-one. And that can certainly play into your advantage because anytime you seduce a woman, you got to get her one-on-one for a long period of time. And extroverts are going to have an easier time banging party chicks, right? But they may not have an easier time getting one of those party chicks to bang them a second time because they haven't made that connection. So there's pros and cons of all personality types. And I think anyone has just as good of a chance as anyone else.
Well, I have a final question, which maybe would be worth looking into. Raleigh, do you think there are, is this even the right way to think about dating and attraction, to view it as a skill set and something to improve and something to learn? Or does it, I mean, is there something about it that maybe removes the human dimension of it? Or are there any sort of positives and negatives to viewing it this way? Or do you think it's a useful paradigm? Or what would you say about that?
Oh, 100%. I think it's 100% a skill set. Social skills are something, even if you have, and I'm not even sure what your genetic makeup could be in terms of social skills, but I think your social skills are way more a learned and an adopted behavior based on your friends, your parents, you know, your social circle growing up, and you get to a certain point and you're either happy with your social life or you realize that, hey, maybe you can make an improvement. And I feel like I was lucky in the sense that I grew up with, you know, I grew up with two sisters and spending a lot of time with my mom. So I had a lot of exposure to women. Women are definitely the more gifted social creatures of the two sexes. And I also, you know, my dad's a pretty athletic, you know, cool, outgoing guy. So I think I had an advantage to that, but I still ended up in a sort of situation where I knew I wanted to improve my social skills and I wanted to improve my ability with women. So I think I was in a unique situation where I had a really great foundation, a great base, and being able to apply specific practices and teachings allowed me to excel really quickly and eventually become, you know, this became my career because I loved it so much and I was good at it. But it's 100%, you know, I don't care if you came from, you know, the worst sort of social upbringing, you can change everything. You can improve it. I've seen guys who are bottom of the barrel. One of the guys in the group, we used to call him the East Coast Kraken, Kevin, and the strides he's made in the last year. And we called him the Kraken because he would just say the most ridiculous, socially awkward, uncalibrated, ridiculous shit ever that people couldn't even connect with. Like, he'd ask a question in the group and you'd be like, what? It wouldn't even, like, forget about talking to chicks. Like, just being able to connect with another human didn't seem like that easy of a feat. And now he's doing stand-up comedy in New York.
and he's getting people laughing. There's no way to get people laughing without making a connection. And the improvements out of him in the last year have been really cool. So it's 100% learned behavior, and anyone can do it.
For myself, dating back to growing up, I grew up with three younger sisters, you know, in a household where prior to high school, I felt like I had more feminine, sensitive qualities. And honestly, being athletic and my father is an extreme athlete, you know, having those genes pushed me into the teen world where I was forced to conform, you know, to those more alpha masculine, you know, personality traits. The big thing that I want to stress here that, you know, that you guys should recognize is that by just being in the group and going out with groups of guys, you know, in your area, it's only going to make your situation easier, and that osmosis is going to become truly valuable. Going at this alone, though the group will help, you know, in terms of camaraderie, I think the guys in Phoenix are an advantage, and the guys in New York are an advantage because they're all working at this together and they're all seeing what is possible. And a big portion of, you know, your growth and your change in social behavior is seeing, well, I know these guys, Robbie, Maxwell, Jesse, et cetera, and the moderators are operating on this social level and doing these things, and just having the understanding that you can also get there by osmosis and by replicating kind of similar behavior. And I do believe that that's learned behavior, that's not something you're necessarily just born with.
Yeah, and I think maybe an advantage of viewing this as learned behavior or a skill or a talent is that maybe it's a way to deal with things like approach anxiety or rejection, which is to say that if you get rejected, it's not you who's getting rejected, it's your skill set that's getting rejected. And maybe the opposite is true, too, that when you do find success in this, it's not necessarily, it shouldn't inflate your ego. It's that people are responding to the things you've developed through practice and experience and so forth. Maybe there's like an inner game component to this also.
Yeah.
Well, that's all I had. Robbie, I don't know if you had anything
else.
I have a question.
Yep, hold on. I'm going to unmute everyone so that we can have the conversation. But I'd love to take questions at this point. We've been about 90 minutes so far. Who's speaking right now?
This is Joel.
Okay.
So how different is a conversation with like the smoking hot girl compared to like the seven? Like how much do you change your game to talk to the different levels of attractive girls, or should I not be thinking that way?
Yeah, I don't know if I change the way I speak to them. I think it's situational. I don't think their attractive level is a component here. It's more the social environment and kind of the other factors of like, are we in a club or are we in a coffee house? Are there friends around, or this is like solo? And that's the way we approach girls, because as soon as you start thinking and like, you know, getting yourself psyched out where, you know, Shalev was just saying like anything over an eight, he like forgets how to talk. You got to put every girl on an even playing field. And that's really the only way you're going to succeed in that approach. There's lots of details that you can take into account in terms of approaching it, but how hot she is does not do anything.
So what are some of the things you look for in your conversation, like, as you're talking to the girl? You also said, like, make myself memorable. Like, what are some of the ways, you were specifically talking to me on the Facebook post.
Yes.
So what are some of the ways that you make sure you're memorable?
So everything is situational. But, you know, the reason we use Tinder as like literally get your reps in on Tinder is because it's black and white. It's like literally the conversation, all the pieces are there. You can see what the person looks like. You have a little bit of information on them, contextual. Like if you were in person, the context would be you're in that location. You know, you're in this, you have like where they are, what time of day is, et cetera. But on Tinder, it's, you know, a little bit of information on them. You know what they look like. So how is your interaction, your 3 to 5 minute conversation on Tinder or in person, going to have someone remember you? And so the first thing is, you know, our conversation and day game etiquette is likely them being hit on the day is going to be memorable versus you hitting them outside a bar where every other fucking guy is hitting on them. So the memorable factor in terms of the way you brought into the conversation, we're already doing this. And Joel, I think you already have this down in terms of like callback humor, in terms of, you know, if you're not making her laugh in the first couple minutes, then you're not doing it right. So you need to call some humor to the situation and then call back that humor and follow up text and conversation. So you are memorable. So there, that personality does come through. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Anyone else have any questions? All right. Robbie had to go tend to something. Thank you guys for your time. Pratik, thank you for moderating this. I'd like everyone to focus on what they're doing this weekend, as we have a call on Sunday that I'd like a little bit more people to contribute to in terms of what they did and you know, how we can be working on our social behavior. So thanks again, and we'll speak to you soon.